My name is Dan, and I am weird. But I don't see weird as a bad thing, though. Being weird just means you march to the beat of a different drum. You don't fit that mold that society wants to shove you into. I'm out searching for people like me. The weirder, the better. This is my story. These are their stories. This is the power of weird. This episode of The Power of Weird is brought to you by The Spectrum Perspective, communication training for the modern workplace. Learn more online at thespectrumperspective.com or simply follow the link in the description below. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Power of Weird. My name is Dan, and I'm your host. A little bit about me. I'm 37 years old. I'm 6'7" tall. In my adult life, I've weighed as little as 295 pounds and as much as 640 pounds. I'm sometimes too smart for my own good, but at times in personal relationships, I'm also pretty clueless. I've been a vegetarian since 2001, and I also don't drink coffee. I'm a sought-after brand designer and leadership coach and the co-founder of a lightsaber combat program. I'm also a dad to a great 17-year-old kid and a proud uncle to three nephews, 21, 18, and 9, and three nieces, 15, 14, and 12. What's probably more interesting about me, though, is that I'm an autistic entrepreneur and business professional. A book that I read in my early 20s changed my life forever. It was called The Secret of the Shadow by an author named Debbie Ford. In this book, Debbie talks about the things that we sometimes are embarrassed about ourselves, bringing them into the light and making them work for you. Creating your own special recipe with the ingredients that only you have to make a difference in your life and in the world. At this point in my life, I already knew I was weird, but I didn't know about my diagnosis. I've tried to accomplish the mission she set out for me in this book every day since. I'll leave a link to the book in this description below. Part of that mission was to make this podcast, finding other people who are weird or different or who don't fit in and who are living their best lives because of it. Through interviewing them and telling their stories, I hope to learn more about myself and that everyone listening does the same. Last time on The Power of Weird.
I joined the army to see the world. I got North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. That was my entire enlistment. The abandonment of the fairness doctrine. Not an opinion. This is, you're just factually wrong. Parakeets.
I call them over-woke liberals.
It's a great talking point. It's completely wrong.
Blast machine.
I didn't ask for your opinion. Thank you very much. You put yourself into someone else's self-awareness.
Do you not know how insurance works? Even though it's micro versus the macro issue, it still makes it different.
And now the conclusion.
So we're going to cut the musician stuff right before we start getting into light bulb jokes, because there's one for every instrument, but I don't feel like we really need to go there.
Nah.
I have told the tuba one on the show, though, before. I'll say that one at least, just so you know. I don't drink, right? But the tuba one is, you know, one tuba player to hold the light bulb and the others to drink until the room starts spinning. Like there's... Yeah, all of you non-band people, I apologize for the last however long we've been talking about this, but it's all legit. It's all for real. We should have like a band geek roundtable at some point, just dive way into, you know, 8-to-5 marching and all this other kind of stuff.
You're gonna have to chop this up into like 4 episodes.
At least 2, yeah. It works, so it's good, man. It's good. It's all about the cool stuff. Well, so tell me about the photography stuff now. Like what made you decide to like really dive hard into that? I mean, I've seen what you do. I mean, you've got beautiful stuff that you've done, but you know, what prompted that? I mean, that's a big shift from.
Yeah. So I started taking pictures when I was 10. I built a shoebox camera for a science fair project, and I turned a closet into a dark room. So I was developing my own pictures. It was as rudimentary as I could get. A couple of shoeboxes, some black flat spray paint, and some negative paper sheets that I would use in it, and you know, had to figure out how to make it work. And you know, after that, I bought a couple of 110 cameras, and I couldn't afford a 35 millimeter good one, so sure. It was just mostly cheap shit. And I had a pretty good knack at figuring out how to frame things, which is 90% of taking a picture is just being able to see the image before you click the button.
Oh yeah.
You know, what you're trying to take the picture of. And then after that, it's figuring out the settings of how to make it show up, how to make it show up on the screen or on the print, how you envisioned it. And
sure.
that's, That's it. I don't like playing in Photoshop very much. I don't like heavy edited pictures. I don't like Agreed. Doing stuff that's, I'm kind of more of a journalistic photographer.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind cropping or, you know, photoshopping out things that don't belong. If, you know, if there's something in there, I don't like doing the, you know, the Vogue model photo shoots.
For your, touch-ups. Right.
Yeah. I don't mind doing touch-ups so much. It's the, you know, changing people's shapes.
Sure.
I don't like doing as much. I mean, it depends on what you're doing. If I'm doing a photo shoot and we're, you know, we're modeling for some clothing brand and they want this to be a runway model and I don't have a runway model, I might make something, you know, make some changes for angles and for shapes and stuff to make it fit the way they want it.
Right.
But generally I'm not, you know, I'm not photoshopping people just for the sake of photoshopping people. I don't really enjoy that. And I don't how there's there are photographers and there are people with cameras and they are not the same thing.
No,
especially with cell phones now, it's so easy to take pictures. Digital cameras are pretty cheap.
And they're pretty good now too.
And they're very good. So if you, it's all about, can you find the picture? And that's, so, you know, when I was a kid, I had basic stuff and I kind of felt, you know, I was pretty good at what I was doing, but I wasn't you know, anywhere becoming a professional photographer. I wasn't going to school for that. It wasn't necessarily a career option. In retrospect, I kind of wish I would have. I think I would have
been
more fun. But, you know, it was just kind of a side hobby until the digital revolution came around. And that was, I was an early adopter. We had a digital camera very early. Casio CV-01, which came out in like 96.
Nice.
Like one of the first, you know, mass produced digital cameras.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a Nikon Coolpix 990, or a 950, rather. I couldn't afford the 990. But I got a 950 when it came out. And that was kind of my camera that I had when the kids were born. And I had that camera for several years, but it was like a 3 megapixel, might have been 2.1. It was, the resolution was very, very limited. It worked great at taking snapshots, but it wasn't really good for actual pictures. But when DSLRs came out and all of a sudden you could get a 6 megapixel, 10 megapixel picture. At that point, it's like, all right, I can actually do this and, and do it for real and take people's pictures.
Well, and that makes a big difference too, because you still have all the same, you know, once you hit that point, you had the digital quality that could then compare with a 35 millimeter quality, but also you were at a point where, you know, you still could, the technology had caught up to a way that you could use the same effects and shutter speeds and everything like that you could on 35 millimeter. So you were able to, you had the best of both worlds finally at that point.
Yeah. And so at that point, there are a lot more photographers on the planet now than there were 20 years ago.
Sure.
But that number is dwarfed by the number of people with cameras.
Because everybody has a camera.
Because everybody has a camera. And and one look on Instagram and you can see the people who are photographers and the people that are not.
True.
And there's a bunch of people who want to be models that want desperately to be the next Simon Crawford or whatever. And they don't have it. And it's something that I've found as a photographer, it's not about looks. It's really not. Right. I've taken pictures of people that should be awesome models because they're just drop dead gorgeous.
Right.
But that if they don't know what they're doing, they don't know how to move on camera. They don't know what poses work well for them. They don't have a routine down. So you can take 100 pictures of them in 5 minutes and then change the next outfit. There are people that are really, really good at modeling. And there are people that really, really, really want to be models, but don't want to put the work in to become a model.
Fair enough.
It's like everything else. Any other, you know, profession, there's people that really want to do it that just aren't suited for it.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And it's the same thing with photography. There's just with people that take pictures. There are some people who are photographers that are really, really good. There's some photographers I am just absolutely in awe of what they do. Even ones that do things that are, you know, heavily Photoshopped. That just they do it well and they're good at it. You know, there's just so much beauty in the world that can be found with a camera if you know how to do it.
Sure.
And I actually got a blog post I wrote several years ago about it. There's this tree in Portland Japanese Garden, and almost everybody that's listening to this has seen this tree. You just may not know where you've seen it or how you've seen it or why you've seen it. It's a Japanese maple that grows in the Portland Japanese Garden. And about 10-15 years ago, Peter Lick, who's another photographer, took a picture of it that he dubbed quote unquote Tree of Life. That was the name of his picture.
That's cool.
And it's this, if you're watching or if you're listening to this right now, just Google Peter Lick, L-I-K, Tree of Life, and you'll see the tree I'm talking about. And it's just, it is a gorgeous tree. It's full fall foliage. and it's on this mound of moss overlooking a lake. And it just, it looks like it's this glorious, you know, 200 foot tall, massive tree mm-hmm. that you can go sit underneath and fairies and gnomes would live under. It's just absolutely beautiful. And the scene on it is one where if you were to see this, you would go through this park looking for it. You would never, ever find it. Because in reality, the tree is about 8 foot tall. It's it's a very small tree. And to get the picture of it, you have to hold the camera underneath the tree from a sidewalk and, you know, be on your knees or lay on the ground to take the picture. It's just a forced perspective.
Right. I'm seeing it. Yeah, it's gorgeous. I've seen this before.
Yeah. I actually took some pictures of other people taking pictures of this tree. There is a rope cordoned off for people to get in line to take the picture because it's the one everybody wants to take.
That's cool.
And I'm
that's
not kidding.
That's awesome. I'll believe it.
This garden, and there's a line to get onto our roller coaster right here on the next to this weird tree that
if you didn't
know it was there. You would have no idea why that's there.
Right.
But it's, you know, the beauty is there. You have to find it. And in that particular case, this is just, it's a beautiful, beautiful shot. It's a beautiful location. And if you weren't, you know, exploring things from different angles, from different perspectives, nobody would have ever found this tree. And mm-hmm. Peter Lick was not the first to take a picture of this by any means. That tree was well known long before he made his famous picture. But you know, there are a bunch of things like that, that if you go looking for the beautiful image, you can find it. If you go looking for the ugly images, you're going to find that too. Mm-hmm. I was in Portland last week unintentionally, and I always have a camera with me, so I took a camera with me, and I went when I had some time downtime. I didn't have a home to go to. I could go hang out in the hotel. So I walked around Portland. I took some more pictures, and a good friend of mine from high school actually lives in the area too. She lives out in the country, but she lives farther away from the city. And I had remarked something on the pictures about how it felt eerie because there was just so few people walking around. It was still a pretty dead environment. And, you know, she had made a comment that I'm surprised you could still take nice pictures of it because of all the homeless people and people shooting up, because that's what people think of when they think of, you know, Portland. You think of homeless people, you think of the riots, you think of all of which it's all forced perspective. It's just not your forced perspective.
Right.
Those things, are there homeless people in Portland? Yes. Are there more homeless people in Portland than there are in other cities? Probably. If you base it per capita, probably. Are there more than there are in LA? No, because, you know, it's LA.
Right.
In San Francisco? No, it's San Francisco. But per capita, are there more homeless people in Portland and Seattle than there are in other places? Probably. And it ties back to politics. I'm sure there are reasons for that. But it also ties into that Portland and Seattle, even in the winter, are nice places to be. I mean, yeah, it rains, but it's not a soaking rain. The temperature is comfortable. It almost never drops below freezing. If you're going to be homeless, Portland's a good place to be homeless. You know, it just, I get that. But the implication was that, you know, it's you can't find beautiful things because there's
too much. Even though it's micro versus the macro issue, it still makes a difference.
But it is perspective. It's what you're looking at. And my whole point, the post I wrote about it was that I've been telling my kids forever, you know, perception is reality. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that because you believe something, it's true. It's just that if somebody believes something about you, to them, it's true. It doesn't matter if it is actually true. It's just perception is reality. If people think you're an asshole, even if you're not an asshole, if everybody thinks you're an asshole, it's too late. You're an asshole.
Right.
You know? And that the whole thing with this picture, how that tied in was perspective. And if you have perspective, you know, becomes your perception, right? And it's perception is perspective.
We can make it to where it sounds like you didn't mess up at all. Don't worry.
I can make my mouth work, I promise. But perspective is perception, and perception is reality. Mm-hmm. And if you can find the beauty of something that you can see, that is your reality. It doesn't mean that the ugly things aren't still there.
Right.
You know, you could always find, you know, I could take that picture of that same tree and make it look unflattering. It can't be done. That doesn't make the beauty that you actually captured from it not there. Mm-hmm. It's still there. It's just when you show somebody that tree is only, you know, 8 foot tall and it's a small little shrub next to a pond from another angle, it doesn't diminish the beauty that's there. It's like the picture of the Taj Mahal. If you ever see somebody take a picture of Taj Mahal looking the other way, it's not pretty, you know, you know, it looks like a dump behind it. I mean, like a literal trash heap. It's just, it's not pretty, but the one angle that you find it in, that one forced perspective is is good. And that's what matters.
It's always hard to, you know, I try to, how do I put this? Through all the experiences I've been in and all the difficulties that I've had, I always try to find whatever silver lining is there, you know, and I always try to find whatever good can come out of something, no matter how difficult it might be. And it makes me sad to hear, like, with because, you know, I know the type of people that are friends with you are good people who are themselves reasonable and not people who are going to be just crazed, you know. But when you talk about, you know, like a homeless person as, you know, they're an eyesore, they're a detraction, you know, that that's something that would not make your photography good. Like it's one of those where I look at it, you know, and I think to myself, like, if I were to see a picture of a homeless person, like if you're walking around Portland and you take a picture that has somebody like that in it, while it, on one hand, yes, you can say, well, this person's given up or this person may be addicted or whatever the case may be. But on the other hand, you can say this is a portrait of someone surviving against all odds, right? Like their life has probably been really, really shitty at least one point or another. And it's that they're in this situation, but regardless of how they got there, they're there and they're surviving, you know? And it's just, you know, the younger generations of folks like your kids' age, you know, like they're starting to, I do feel like they see some of that, like they see the negatives of that. They see, like they try to look at the positive of it. And so I guess I to say that at least there's some encouraging, you know, stuff with that. I feel like one of the problems that, say, mine or your generation has is that we look at things and we say, oh, well, that's so sad. Just don't do it in my backyard. You know,
that's common everywhere. NIMBY is absolutely a problem. And yeah. And it bugs the hell out of me. It really does.
And so it's just one of those things. Like if we have to see a problem in order to be able to do something about it, we can't just hide it. And, you know, we can't be a cat in the litter box and just cover it up and pretend it's not there, you know?
And to some extent, there are situations where it's, the answer is look away. There are things I was like, yeah, if you don't want to see that, don't look at it.
Right.
You know, at the same time. Fair enough. So with a homeless quote unquote problem, air quotes.
Right. Yeah.
The homeless problem, you know, is, what is the solution? And in all cases, is there a problem to be solved? There are people in Portland, especially Portland and Seattle, I know of, that are homeless by choice, right? Yeah. There are people who go to Portland to be homeless because of this bohemian lifestyle or whatever.
Right,
it is
right.
Not the norm. It is not the norm. I'm not trying to dismiss it as that's why there's a homeless problem. No,
of course not. Yeah.
So if the solution to your problem is put everybody in houses, you're not going to solve the problem.
Right. Agreed. Right? Yeah.
If your solution is find everybody houses and find a place to live for everybody, does that solve the problem of getting them off the streets and out of your, you know, out of your vision? Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But maybe it just moves the problem elsewhere. Right. There's got to be a solution to each individual's problem. Maybe that problem is mental health care. Maybe that problem is drug addiction care. Maybe that problem is simply wealth management. So some of that problems are domestic. Maybe some of those problems are, you know, psychological. There's, you know, for the problem you see, there's thousands of underlying problems that all have.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, I agree.
And some of it is simply, are you a decent human being? Sometimes you see somebody on the street and, you know, people are assholes. Sometimes those people on the street are assholes, and sometimes people deserve to be on the street. But
true,
you know, again, that's not the norm.
Well, it's right. Yeah. I always have said too, I mean, you know, just be my personal theory is that, you know, if we were all judged by the worst thing we've ever done, nobody'd really be worth anything, you know? Yeah. And, that's something that that's a realization I came to after my divorce with, you know, my ex-wife was she was immature and young, but a good human being, but she, you know, I had to recognize that. Like if I hadn't recognized that, then I would have gone down a very dark, you know, path of anger and resentment and all this other stuff, as opposed to being able to kind of, you know, move forward and live and be a better person. And, you know, and I feel like it's that same way of, you know, I don't necessarily seek out assholes, right? Like you can't have toxic people, but at the same time, you can still reach out a hand to try to be like, hey, whatever is wrong with you, like you're still a human being, you know, like, you know, let's try to.
There are people I know that I like, I am friends with, that are assholes.
Oh yeah,
for sure. There are people that are absolutely, I've got this one friend, Steve. I love him dearly. I've known him since I was 4 years old. Mm-hmm. He is an asshole. He's going out with a girl. They've been going out for 5, 6, 10 years. I don't know how long they've been going out. She is one of the nicest, sweetest, prettiest people I have ever met. She's drop dead gorgeous. He does not deserve her at all. And he has done hurtful things. He's done stupid shit. He's done all sorts of reasons that she should be gone.
Sure.
But she loves him and she sticks with him. And he, you know, just, you know, from an objective perspective, he does not deserve her at all.
I can't
stress enough. He is absolutely an asshole who loves to stir the pot, just absolutely turn to the punch bowl everywhere he goes because he just likes the conflict. He likes watching the people fight it out and stuff.
Oh, I haven't heard that many metaphors in a row like that in a long time. That was good.
I love him dearly, but man, he is just a neologism of portmanteaus of cliches. It's just like, wow. Love him dearly. Steven, if you're listening, sorry, bud, but you're an asshole.
Well, you know, I mean, the two of us, you know, we in some circles, the two of us would be considered semi-smooth, but we also have been known to put our foot in our mouths occasionally. Oh, yeah. So it's not like haven't had our moments like that too.
I've probably put my foot in my mouth in this call a couple of times already and won't realize until I can't believe I said it. I didn't mean it like that. I meant it like this. Damn it. I do that often. This kind of goes back to the politics stuff from before. A lot of people's misunderstandings are not actually misunderstandings. Sometimes
not at all. Yeah.
Intentional. But sometimes it's the person just plain misspoke. They meant one thing.
Oh, agreed.
And the way the word came out, it was wrong. That happens all the time. Like a little bit ago, I used the wrong word and I corrected myself afterwards. Sure. But it was only because I noticed it right then. Mm-hmm. I may have said the wrong word that I meant something else. And I said the wrong word and never did correct it because I didn't know it.
Sure.
That happens all the time with so many things. Mm-hmm. And, I remember particularly is in my head. One of those things that you lie awake at night. God damn it. I can't believe I did that.
Yeah.
And I was talking with somebody. I was talking about aviation. We were talking about, he just got his pilot's license.
Oh, cool.
And we were talking about it. I've been flying since I was 16. And, it's like he'd just gotten his, and we were talking about something. And I was kind of not really messing with him, joking with him. We were talking about stuff. And he said something about, adjusting the altimeter. And it's something when you first get in the plane, you're going to take off, part of your pre-flight checks. You do certain things. You got to make sure your altimeter matches the barometric pressure of the outside. So, you're reading ground level where it's at. And, he said something about adjusting the barometer. Right. And I knew what he meant. It's like,
of course. Right.
You don't adjust the barometer. No. In my 25 years of flying, I've never adjusted the barometer. I do that. And I was teasing with him. And my next statement was going to be, no, you adjust the altimeter.
To
count for barometric pressure. But I got called away. I was at work.
Oh, and somebody called
me away. And so I had to leave mid thought. And so to this day, and he left the company a couple of days later for something else. And so I never got to go back to explain what I was trying to say there. And so he's walking away thinking, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Right. Wow.
And it wasn't even a perspective thing. It was just, I wasn't able to correct the thought. And I still, this was like 15 years ago and it still is going through my head.
Yeah. Oh man. See, I love it. No, it's 100% true, man. I do have to say one thing. How do I put this? One of the things that I have noticed in our world lately is, as Dave Chappelle would call it, a frailty of spirit, which I really strongly agree with. But it just seems like everybody nowadays, they're looking like people are trying. They're looking to
be offended.
Yeah, man. And so if you do say you say something, the wrong thing by accident or whatever, there's no understanding oops, I said the wrong thing. It's people are after you, man. Yeah. It's insane. Like,
oh, you lied. You said this and you said that. No, you lied. You lied to me. Yeah. They're looking for outs. It all ties into the whole, looking out for number one. It's the thing where, as a Democrat, as somebody who's been in, a liberal as long as I have, if you've ever seen, there's a show that was on HBO several years ago called The Newsroom. It's a Aaron Sorkin show.
Yeah.
One of my favorite shows of all time.
It's a good show.
It was a great show. And it's one of those, if you're listening to this and thinking, I've seen that, it's not realistic. No, it's a TV show. It's not meant to be realistic. Yes, it's fucking liberal porn is what it is.
I mean, right. Yeah, it's kind of like Boston Legal. Yeah,
it's not like Boston Legal. It's the stuff that, you know, you were smart enough to say things like this off the top of your head that you need a room full of writers to say it. Yeah,
right.
It's the things you wish you'd right. Those little jabs. But you know, he's got a line in there when he's doing his Dead big great. Massive speech. Yeah.
Sorry.
He's got a line there. Jeff Daniels' character got a line in there where it's like, you know, if liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Dude, for real. He's right.
He's right. The reason is because we let people slide with shit. We let people mm-hmm. get away with shit. Going back to Obamacare.
Sure.
Yeah, we gave the Republicans everything they wanted to get the deal passed.
True.
And they still would not vote for it. We went out of our way to accommodate. They went bent over backwards to do everything they wanted to do in the hopes that we're going to get some bipartisanship out of it. Mm-hmm. And instead we compromised with them on everything and we still had to vote through on our own. They didn't mm-hmm. help with anything. They refused to. And then, you know, at that point, it's like, there's no point in negotiating. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to do everything on your own anyways.
Right.
And then you get the moniker that, oh yeah, you're not being bipartisan. You're doing everything partisan, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's, you know, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you're done.
Sure.
And, you know, with like the last election with, you know, Trump and everything, mm-hmm. there has been, you know, there's this, the big lie about, you know, that he actually won the election and we're cheating him by having right. illegal voters and blah, blah, blah. None of that is remotely true. None of that's been documented in any way, shape or form. If there was evidence for it, come out with it because we want to fix it.
Yeah,
there's just, the evidence just doesn't exist. If it did, they would have already brought it out. The MyPillow guy is supposed to be hoarding it. It's like, wow,
right.
Let it out, bitch.
Right.
But
it's not going to help you sleep at night, you know?
Yeah. But when, you know, when there is actual cases of voter fraud, it does happen. It's, you know, 50 cases out of 50 million. But right. sure, you know, yeah, sure. That's the real problem.
Statistically irrelevant, but still a problem.
Almost yeah. every time I've seen instances where it does come out, it was the Republicans that were cheating. It's like, what the hell? But nobody calls anybody out. Nobody, sure. you know, we let them get the win and then they kind of cheat their way around the system. And when they get caught even, oh, you know what? Time has passed. We're going to let it slide. Just like mm-hmm. when W got out of office, there was no real investigations into all the things that should have been investigated. You know, we're going to go let it go. That passes mm-hmm. in the past. We can't do anything about it. So we're not going to investigate. I think it was wrong because we let them slide. The second Obama's out of office, we're going to investigate everything, even right. if there wasn't a problem, because there wasn't any problems.
Well, yeah, the biggest controversy he had was he wore a gray suit one day or a tan suit.
Tan suit. My wasn't bad. Tan. He wasn't couth enough to wear a gray suit.
Right. Sorry. My bad. Tan suit. Yes.
But yeah. But when things like that, we let it slide on their side, but they won't let anything slide on our side, even if there wasn't anything wrong. And being an asshole gets a win.
True.
And so it's hard, especially as a liberal, it's hard for me to, mm-hmm. I hate being the asshole. I hate it.
Oh yeah,
agreed. Everything in my being says I don't want to be the asshole in the situation. But they want to be the asshole anytime they can. And that when they win, because I wasn't the asshole, I am pissed at myself that I let them get away with something. Mm-hmm. You know, not necessarily Republicans in general, but people.
Right, yeah,
if I
yeah,
see
yeah.
somebody skirting the system, if I see somebody that, you know, is cutting in line at the supermarket, it pisses me off, you know, and it's like,
right.
But they, you know, if I don't step in and intervene, then they're going to get away with it. And they just get away with it. And that encourages them to do it again the next time. And
true.
You know, shit like that. It's like, nobody cares anymore. It's like, this, mm-hmm. this is not norm. There are rules.
Yeah. Yeah. I am of the personal theory that there are the very, very vocal extremes, right? Yes. The ones that don't play well with others and on both sides, right? And yep. then all the way back around too, there's a bunch of them. But like on the extremes, you've got these small amounts of extremely vocal people that if you're, you know, part of like the regular people on the right, for example, say you're the 80% of the people on the right, you think that the 20% of the people on the left are everybody and vice versa. You know, most of the people from what I've seen anyway, talking to all these different people, most people that fall in the middle and aren't part of those two crazy groups, you know, we just want to get shit done.
Yeah, both sides of the fringes are nuts.
Right, exactly. And it's just, like, it'd be really nice if we could like lock them in a room together and then just get some other stuff done while they're arguing, you know, but
yeah,
but then how that would work.
Then you'd be guilty of war crimes because you'd be responsible for the bodies, you know.
I don't know. If they can get away with marching the Capitol, I'm sure we could figure something out about getting, you know, getting the extremes together. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So yeah. So one thing that I do as I wrap up interviews is that, I know we had talked that actually you were going to be a groomsman in my wedding just when Jess and I first got engaged. And if I do ever get to that point again, you're on the list. So, remember.
I'll be there.
But yeah. So anyway, Jess was somebody who we were engaged for 4.5 years until she passed away. There were some, it was a tough situation all the way around. But one of the things that, her story, and I tell this every time just because I feel like it's you never know when it's somebody's first episode, so I want people to know who she is and why I asked this question. She was adopted at birth. She was raised by a family in Michigan that, they took care of her basic, food, shelter, clothing needs, but sometimes she always felt like there was not a lot of like emotional support. Like she was brought out when it was like, hey, look at these kids, and then just go back to her, do her own thing. And so she had a lot of trauma from that. She felt abandoned already being adopted, and then it went further. So instead of rolling up into a ball once she graduated high school and kind of got out on her own, she hit the street running, man. She went and busted her butt, got her bachelor's degree in psychology, got 2 master's degrees, 1 in community counseling and school counseling, did a lot of community counseling hours, but decided that school counseling was where she really wanted to be. She got hired after a year of working part-time or partial year of working part-time after she graduated into working at a Title I elementary school full-time here in Tennessee. Title I, for those folks that don't know, are the really low income places that, typically the teachers that come there or the faculty and staff that come there because they want to be there, as opposed to being recruited to be there because they can't pay as much, that kind of stuff. They're there for the cause. And she was the school counselor there for 11 years until she passed away. And her sole mission in life was to make sure that every single kid that walked to the door received the love, affection, and attention and the support that she felt she never got. And so in honor of her, and because, she was such an inspirational and also someone that I just learned a lot from, she always liked the quote from that's attributed to Gandhi, which is the be the change you want to see in the world. So I've adopted that for the show. And so the question that I always ask, and I ask this to you, Jim, what is the weird that you want to see in the world going forward?
What's the weird I want to see in the world going forward? As in like, What do I think is working that?
Well, I've had a lot of different answers. I mean, it's all about what you think. I mean, I've had some people say that they want to see that people are, stepping out of themselves and appreciating the differences they have in other people. And I've also had other people say that they would really like to be able to go into a coma for a few years and wake up and it's turned into Lord of the Rings where magic is real. And, and that elves rule the, rule Wall Street. And I mean, so there's lots of room for interpretation there.
So if that's kind of a pretty open-ended question, I guess
it is,
there's
intentionally. So,
yeah, that's hard to put a finger on something you really feel like there's things it depends on how you categorize your weird too.
Fair enough. That's
one of the things that I think about a lot is, am I living in the right time? Things would have been different. The things I like, would have been much better off if I was born 10 years earlier or 20 years later. And there's just, there's things like that. So a lot of things that I kind of like to look at is how things were better back then and how things are better now. Mm-hmm. And the generational rifts that have come across from that. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Christy a couple of days ago. We were, Christy being my wife, by the way, of 26 years coming up.
Definitely a great lady.
But the, one of the things we were talking about was that there's, the things that we think of now, like it was in real relationships to politics. If I ever, we were watching something and long story, Adam Schiff was on it and he was talking. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I was mentioning is that, if I ever was thrown into office for something, it's just somebody made me be a senator or something. One of the things I would have to do is I would need a council of people. And, I would have a rule, if I've got 10 people on my council, half of them have to be under 30. That's a requirement.
Yeah, that's smart.
You have to have half of them be young because, things matter for people that are younger. And this is the first generation where young people really have had the say they deserved. And the older people really, really hate it. the young people, they're navigating the bureaucracy. They're invading the system. But, they social media, the internet, just being able to get things out, young people are able to speak their minds and actually have mm-hmm. those minds hold weight. And, you know, quite frankly, be smacked down when they're wrong, as they should be. You know, you people say things that are stupid, you know, whether they're old or young. But, you know, historically, old people have smacked down everything. You know, it's like, you're sure to know, shut up. And that kind of gets ignored now because we are seeing people, you know, with voices making legitimate points that deserve to be heard. And sure, if 90% of what you say is bullshit and you make one, you know, rational point, that rational point's still valid. So let's, you know, let's hear it. When we were talking about this, it's like, look, things that we think are stupid, I do not comprehend. I do not understand why TikTok is as popular as it is.
Oh, dude, I know.
I don't comprehend. I don't understand why Instagram and Twitter are popular. I know what they are. I know what they do. I understand how they work. I'm on most of those platforms. I'm not right, yeah. TikTok because I don't do video because, you know, let's face it, I'm a, you know, 350-pound ugly dude. Nobody wants to look at my face. So, you know, I do pictures so I can see on the right side of the camera. But, you know, there's things that I don't get. I don't begrudge anybody who does get them. If you want to watch, you know, stupid TikTok videos all day, more power to you. It's stupid, but you like it. And that's not an insult calling it stupid. It's that it's just a dumb thing. It's a guilty pleasure. It's something you like doing. Right. When we were kids, we thought Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were cool.
Love it's like, the shit out of turtles.
It's,
yeah.
It's stupid. You know, X-Men on TV was stupid. It was horrible. It was awful. It doesn't make it bad. It's just
they're rebooting that stuff.
Oh yeah. Our parents had disco music for crying out loud. No bottom pants. It was stupid. It made no sense, but it worked. You know, the previous generation had, you know, fucking poodle skirts and, you know, the Shmoo from Little Abner. Remember the little ghost looking thing? And
hey, don't, I'm going to have to look that up.
You have to look it up. The Shmoo, S-C-H-M-O-O. That was like all the rage back in the day. That was kind of like fidget spinners of our generation.
Yeah. Or
the current generation. We all have these things that are stupid, but to your generation or to your group or your in-group, are super cool. And that doesn't make it wrong that it's stupid. It just means that's your thing. Everybody has their things. And if you can understand that it's okay to have your thing, even if I don't get it, that doesn't mean it's wrong. It's like,
that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it makes me think of Power Rangers, man. Like, because Power Rangers was just like, it still is. I mean, it is the most over the top, just kind of grab bag of crazy crap that you ever seen, but it was so much fun, you know.
I hated Power Rangers because I was the generation going, no, Teenage Mutant Turtles was better. This is
fair enough. See, well, you're a few years older than me though, so that's the thing. Like, Ninja Turtles were when I was little, but it was a small difference. Well, what's funny, like, we've got this, I don't think I've gotten to talk to you about this at all, but like, one of my clients is a martial arts school here in the area. And we've started this thing that's a lightsaber combat program, which is wicked cool. And, but we've got these people in there, and one of our guys is an instructor. He's 10 years younger than me. He's a really nice guy. You know, he and I are good friends now. He's like an American Ninja Warrior, all this other kind of stuff. Right. But he's all about some Power Rangers. He's like, yeah, that's what made me want to get into gymnastics and stuff, man. He's like, you know, like they've got Power Morphicon, you know, and all these people go dressed as, you know, Rangers, all these different events as cosplay and all this. It's like, all right, you know, sure. It's not something you would expect, but it's like, that's, you know, here's this little thing that
my kids got really into Friends here a couple of years ago. It's like, stuff's been off the air for 10 years and they got into Friends.
Gosh.
And it was like,
that's awesome. Friends, really? Wow. Yeah.
I was never into Friends either, but they got really into Friends. It was like, you know, a lot of people now are into The Office and it's like, I don't.
Right.
It was just a show. It was all right. It wasn't
right.
But people are just like all in on The Office.
Well, I will say I'm a fan of The Office, but I never watched it when it was on the air. But also their pilot sucked. The pilot for The Office was atrocious.
I saw a few episodes of the British version that was like, you know, Martin Freeman and Ricky Gervais. And it was funny from a British comedy perspective.
Oh, yeah.
I
totally
watched the show of that. And then when I saw the American one, it was like, this just feels like a ripoff. It didn't
feel
good. I've seen so many partial episodes that are, every one of them have been great.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so it felt like a show.
It took a while until they kind of gained their own, kind of had their own thing going on. Like, there was one bit on the American Office where Dwight, the beet farmer who is like the nemesis of Jim, the main nice guy, you know, Dwight's always upset because people don't take policy seriously and all this stuff. And he got finally, he was pissed he was really, really, really pissed because people weren't paying attention during fire drills. Yes. And so he went and like,
locked the door.
Yeah. He locked the door, puts a fire in a trash can in the like break room. And then he puts
everybody
like,
panics.
Yeah. It's he great. Heats the outsides of the door. So the door, but the handles are warm on the inside. So they're like, yeah, the one guy gets up in the ceiling and the woman's like taking cats out of her desk and handing them up to the guy in the ceiling, like, save the cat, save the cat. And he's like, no, like save the cat. The one guy literally has a heart attack in the middle of the room, like has to go to the ER, like all this other stuff. Like they're trying, you know, Michael Scott, the what's his name? Steve Carell's character is like, okay, everybody, we're going to go in an orderly fashion out the front door. He's like, the handle's warm. What does that mean? And Dwight's like, it means there's a fire out there. And he's like, okay, never mind with the orderly rent. Every man for themselves, get out of here. And everybody scatters. I mean, like shit like that. You can't, I mean, like that's, they have some classic stuff, but you just have to watch and find it.
We'll have to check that one. I've seen a lot of the episodes. I've seen that particular clip.
Yeah.
I think I enjoy The Office more as seeing clips on YouTube than actually.
Fair enough. Oh, yeah. No, I get it. Yeah.
It's kind of like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Same thing. I love the clips of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but I've just not gotten into the show.
I would have really liked The Office if it was like the Jim torturing Dwight show. Like, I really enjoyed that. Like, there was a bit where...
I sympathize with Dwight so way too much.
Do you really?
Like Jim, yeah.
Oh, come on.
I'm the nerd.
Not that kind of nerd, though. I know you, man. You're not that guy.
No, I'm not that guy. I sympathize with him way more. Jim comes across as the bully in that situation.
Well, I don't know. In the second or third season, like, he moved to another office or some shit, but he took a bunch of Dwight's personal stationery and started sending him faxes from the future. Be like, don't drink the coffee, Dwight. And then somebody's drinking coffee. He's like, no! Slaps it out of his hand. He's like, you'll thank me later. You know, I mean,
don't get me wrong. He's not a good guy. Dwight is obnoxious as hell, but
well, the whole thing
is Jim is mean too much.
Well, I don't know. I think it's one of those when you're acting like that, you kind of are asking for it.
That was one of the differences between that and the British version. I can't remember the guy's name who plays the Dwight. The Dwight counterpart. Remember. He's I've seen him in a ton of things. He's one of he's the pirate that doesn't have that has the glass eye in Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah. That's the pieces of it. Piece of
Yeah.
The whole time. That guy, I can't remember his name.
He's funny.
He's the Dwight counterpart, and Martin Freeman is the Jim counterpart. And in those particular episodes, his character is just so sleazy. He's not, you know, the by the book nerd that Dwight is. He's just
right.
He just oozes sleaze. It's gross, like you know, carny folk. You
know? Right.
That's and so it feels much more natural for Martin Freeman's character to be pranking.
Sure.
It doesn't feel as mean-spirited. Where Fair Jim enough. Against Dwight just feels mean-spirited.
I think what I like about it is being the kid who didn't really understand things, being like the socially awkward kid or whatever else, like, you know, sometimes you would be the recipient of stuff just because you didn't know how much of an ass you were.
Yeah.
And so I like being on the other side of seeing like, oh, okay.
I think that's why I empathize with Dwight than anything else. It's like, I get Dwight.
Well, sure.
I don't like him very much, but I get Dwight.
Well,
get
him. I mean, there were just so many good things. Like he put like every day for like a week and a half, he put like a couple more nickels in the guy's phone receiver. You know, so he got used to the weight over a couple of weeks, and then one morning came out and took them all out. And so when he picked up the phone receiver, he smacked himself in the face. I mean, like that's brilliant, man. It is
brilliant. Brilliant. But, you know, he did well for himself. You know, he grew up becoming a partner, Harry Mudd in Star Trek. So, you know, it worked out.
Well, right. Yeah, that's true. No. Oh, yeah. Rainn Wilson's done some really cool stuff. I mean, I've got no issue with he's done some neat stuff.
No, it's that was Dwight. That's what he grew up to be, was Harry Mudd.
Well, I was thinking Rainn Wilson's been in some of the.
Yes.
Well, anyway, yeah.
Wilson has been a lot of stuff. He's got a very good range.
He does.
I like me some Rainn Wilson.
I can't help it. It's just there's so many good things that like things I want to try too. Right, like putting somebody's all of their stuff in the vending machine. You know, like from their desk. Like how good is that? The whole thing of when he went to like Jim had a dentist appointment and he had one of his friends that's an actor that was like a little Asian guy come in and take his place.
I've seen that one too.
It's brilliant, man. It's brilliant. He's like, don't use that phone. That's for that's for office personnel only. He like looks at the picture. It's got the guy. I mean, you gotta.
And Pam playing along with that.
I mean, I just anyway. Like I said, stuff. It's the little things like that. I would. Yeah, they probably would say that he was bullying Dwight nowadays. Like he probably gets canceled.
Yeah. And that's one of my things. I don't like uncomfortable humor for the sake of uncomfortable. I never liked American Pie. It's a funny movie.
Oh man. Yeah,
I empathize way too much with the people that get caught in embarrassing situations.
Fair enough.
And I kind of internalize that. I don't like that feeling. I know, you know, that feel the one character that gets caught with the apple pie. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, I've never had that happen to me, but I can totally imagine, totally imagine myself in that scenario and how embarrassing that would be.
Well, his name in the movie was Jim.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah, I can just internalize that embarrassment.
Right.
I don't like it. I don't enjoy something about Mary. The same thing. There was a few scenes
in
that where it's like that. And it's just, I don't know why I internalize that so much, that embarrassment factor.
Right.
It's not enjoyable.
You know? Fair enough. Well, I have to say, though, the American Pie guys, they even after those first three movies, like they made some more. It's the National Lampoon thing, right? So they keep making they made stuff. A ton of them. And but I've seen some of them. Just I find that kind of stuff really funny, just because I can identify people I know that are every single character.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. The series, I'm not saying I didn't like the movie at all. It was just like there's parts of it that I don't go out of my way to rewatch that movie, even though I enjoyed watching it.
Right,
because of the whole uncomfortableness. And yeah, I don't know why I empathize with those people that are getting embarrassed more than I laugh at them. I don't know. I've always been that way.
Well, I've always been the kid. Well, like I said, it's kind of nice to not be the. Well, I don't know.
I get what you're saying.
It's nice not to be the kid that's laughed at that point. But yeah, no, I get it. It's just I understand though. I get that. So wrapping up everything here, if people are trying to find you, if they are interested in your photography, or you know, I'm sure you have 80 million other things going on because you're just cool like that. How do people find you?
So my gallery page is on the web. It's the easiest one to find. It's pix.blue. That's pix.blue, B-L-U-E. The main page is blueprintsphoto.com, but there's links to that from the gallery page. It's just a bookmark kind of. But yeah, that's it.
So where are you doing photography stuff right now?
Right at the moment, I'm doing them in Indianapolis. I can travel if somebody's got a project that they want to do at a particular place.
Sure.
I am open to going other places to shoot.
Very cool.
I do a lot of model shoots for clothing lines and stuff like that. And I really enjoy doing like nature shoots.
Sure.
But yeah, it's
referencing that and a little mini plug for me, since I've got into podcasting, a lot of folks have requested that I turn my brand design skills and marketing brain towards helping other podcasters. So we've launched a project through the Power of Weird called Branded Weird, which you can go to brandedweird.com and it'll take you right to the page on our website. But if anybody out there is looking to do cool stuff and want to work with me doing that kind of stuff, Jim is one of my guys who I would reach out to and say, hey, let's, you know, if you're wanting if you need photos and all that kind of stuff, he'd be the guy to make that happen. So, you know, definitely go and check out his stuff and you know, it might be a chance you might get to work with both of us, which is extra cool. We're both big guys, beautifully bearded, very creative, you know, all that kind of fun stuff.
My beard is lessening as of late. I had to trim everything back for a musketeer costume for Halloween.
You know, of all things that you could trim it back for, I think that was probably worthwhile. So
yeah, you can see the video here. Your listeners can't. Oh, yeah, I've got a full on Tony Stark /
Three
Musketeers. Yeah,
you got a bigger frame than Tony does, though. I mean, it's got a different shape.
I would need a Hulkbuster version of the armor.
Man, the best Marvel meme I've seen in a while recently. It has Tony in his different armors. This is like Mark 1, Mark 50, Mark 75, and it's got Hulkbuster, Mark Ruffalo. Yeah, it was great. It was really good. So, all right, everybody. Well, we are going to sign off for now. My guest today has been a good friend of mine. He goes by James Kling, actually, if you're meeting him for the first time. But we call him Jim because he's an old friend. Love the guy to death. One of my favorite people in the entire world. And I'm super glad to be able to get him on here. All you folks out there, remember, keep listening, and we'll see you next time on The Power of Weird.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Weird. This episode of The Power of Weird was brought to you by The Spectrum Perspective, communication training for the modern workplace. Learn more online at thespectrumperspective.com or simply follow the link in the description below. Make sure to stay tuned for more of my story, as well as great interviews with amazing weird people. And remember, be the weird you want to see in the world. We'll see you next time on The Power of Weird.